Stand by, watch.
Let's go. Let's go.
You're about to experience action like you've never heard it before. Action sports, celebrities, badasses, and massive interviews. All coming to you from the Polaris Razor Studio. This is Jim Beaver's Project Action, exclusively on Podcast One.
Welcome to Jim Beaver's Project Action, coming at you from the Polaris Razor Studio. And as always, on the Podcast One Network, we've got an extra special episode for you guys today, jumping out of our box a bit. You know, the past two months, the show, I've been so busy. We've been doing like best of, director's cut interviews from the Down and Dirty Radio Show. Last week, we jumped into a lost episode that I filmed on did on Fremont Street with a bunch of action sports and motorsports interviews. So we kind of got an eclectic mix. You know, if you look back the past couple of years, we've done all things action, right? It's been action-packed. Action sports, racing, fighting, action movies, stuntmen, we've been all over the place. Sports, athletes, all things action-packed, you know. This time we're going back, I guess, a little bit to Hollywood and the film side of things. Got my friend John Wright. He's a director, producer, I guess a guy who yells action, right? That would be John Wright. Also a radio host, a very, very good friend of mine. We do a lot of projects together. We've done a podcast in the past. But this week, Project Action, we're jumping out of our box. We've got John Wright on. It's an hour-long interview. We talk you get John and I together, and we can talk politics. We can talk electronics and tech. We can talk religion. You just never know where the conversation is going to go, right? And this week with John, it definitely goes along the line. Well, we talked nuclear, nuclear weapons and all kinds of stuff. But he's got a new film out. It's been out for a while in theaters, select theaters and screenings. It's called Leaving My Father's Faith. It's about the Campolos, and it's an amazing film about a son and a father who were both ministers, high-profile ministers, preachers, I guess, however you want to say it. But the son, losing the faith, goes and kind of blazes his own trail. It's an amazing, amazing film. It's now available on Amazon for live streaming. It's called Leaving My Father's Faith. But John and I, we talk about the film. We talk about all kinds of stuff. It's not necessarily all religion-based, right? John and I, we bounce all over the grid. I think you guys are going to love this one with my good friend John Wright. Definitely give him a follow on social media. It's just John Wright, at just John Wright. But the film is Leaving My Father's Faith. And we'll get into this interview here in a second. But before we do, I got to thank you guys for tuning in to Project Action this week. And every week. Thanks to everybody who's gone onto iTunes and subscribed to this podcast. It's the easiest way to get it beamed right to your smart device, your iDevice. I don't know, whatever. You can also get it on the Podcast One Network, their app, their website, my website, downanddirtyshow.com. But if you go to iTunes, the easiest way to get it, please click the subscribe button. Then you make sure you get every episode. And once you subscribe, if you leave a rating and or a review, it definitely helps us out. I don't think you realize how much that actually helps. iTunes looks at that, and they've got some crazy algorithm that's way above my pay grade. But they use that to determine what shows are popular and what's not. Obviously, we're always at the top of the charts, so we're doing something right, but I need your guys' help. Please leave that rating 1 through 5 stars. I don't care what you rate me. If you hate me, 1. Like me, 5. In between, go in the middle. Whatever, just leave it. And if you leave a review, if you leave your Twitter, Instagram, at username, I'll follow you back on social media. You can also check out my other show, the Down and Dirty Radio Show, on iTunes or networks across the country, and my website as well. Please subscribe to that on iTunes. Also, if you want to follow me on social media, it is at JimBeaver15, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, facebookgroups.com/JimBeaver15. You can get a hold of me. I accept DMs, love guest suggestions, your feedback, or you can use my website, downanddirtyshow.com. And I guess we've kind of got through all the housekeeping, right? Before we do that, I got to tell you about my good friends over there at TrueCar. You know, if you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? Same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. Trust me, it is tough. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something to you. Well, we're introducing True Price from True Car. Now you know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories. Before you even get to the dealership, True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars that you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know if the true price is a great price? Well, because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same exact car you want. You know the guy down the street that just bought the Subaru and you want that Subaru? But, man, you want to know if he got a good deal? Well, True Price, they'll let you know what that person paid. True Car certified dealers know this, and they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. And, you know, I've got a to-do list every day. It's like a mile long, right? And it includes sending email, running errands, paying bills, going to the grocery store. Everybody has a to-do list. You never know what's on it. But here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to your to-do list. And the good thing is you don't have to go anywhere and you don't have to pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket just may be the most rewarding thing that you do today. Thank you, Geico. Thank you, True Car. Thank you, listeners. And right now, we're going to roll into this interview with my good friend, John Wright. All right. I am here this week on Project Action with my good friend, John Wright.
Hey, what's going on?
I've been on your show, I don't know how many times. You and I have worked on
a million times.
We worked on a ton of projects together, everything else. It's finally cool to have you on one of my shows.
Yeah, I've never done this.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was thinking about, you know, your intro where you say, like, you know, athletes, yeah, celebrities, and badasses. And so I'm neither of the first two, so I better be a badass.
You're a badass producer, director. Like, we can – badass is very – it's all-encompassing, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah.
I'll try to be a badass. Yeah. I'll be a badass right here for you.
You know what's funny, though? You and I have talked. Like, this show is more – it was supposed to be originally just action sports. It's so far gone off the deep end.
Right.
Like,
we're still doing everything now.
Yeah, we're still in the sports category in iTunes, and I was just thinking. I'm like, I probably ought to talk with Podcast One and
see if it can widen the scope.
Well, we need to be at a different category because some of the stuff I go, like, I'm just like, yeah, there's no way. And, like, what you and I are going to talk about today, like, there's no tie to the sports and recreation.
Well, this is
category.
So far off the beaten path for your crowd, right?
Yeah. So, but
this one in particular?
It's funny because it's kind of like Joe Rogan. Like, I've got to the point, like, you know, I've got my show that's on KLPZ now, the Down and Dirty Show, and we just.
Right.
It's mainly motorsports, a little bit of action sports. We do some rock stars and stuff occasionally. Had one of the founders of the band Live. Remember the album?
Yes.
Flying Copper? I just had him on. He's a massive race fan, sponsors race cars. I just did like a 30-minute interview with him.
Nice. And, who knew?
And yeah, you realize that album, you don't hear about Live much. They still tour. They've got a new album coming out.
Yeah.
It's one of the top 100 albums of all time.
Crazy. That,
you know, but we're just talking about 90s.
Yeah, that band was huge.
Yeah. They still are, like, just not in the U.S. Like, they're touring right now Australia, and it's, like, sold-out arenas, right?
Crazy.
It's just weird how certain places, you know, bands and things
like
that.
No, it is. That is weird. Yeah, and Germany is like that. Like, Germany has a lot of bands that you wouldn't think, you know, or, like, they love, like, David Hasselhoff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's funny because I was, yeah, like, Hasselhoff does a tours like once a year,
right,
and does appearances. He doesn't do them in the States because nobody cares. But he goes to some of these other places, and it's like, even I think there was something like China where Baywatch was like so big over there. It was like, mm-hmm, it was like dubbed over, but I don't know what it was. And it was like they were just, Michael Jackson was the same way though. He got to the point where he wasn't selling an album in the United States, but he's like this global sensation
everywhere else
in the world, right?
No, it's true. And I mean, I grew up in the UK. I grew up in Belfast, Northern Ireland. And then moved over here, you know, what, 14, 15 years ago or something like that. And we did get all those shows. We got Baywatch. We got Knight Rider with David Hasselhoff. We got all those shows. I mean, a lot of American culture is exported through, like, you know, TV and movies. Yeah. And so, yeah, I had a lot of that going on.
And sometimes, too, with American culture, and we're so far off what we're going to talk about today, but that's what happens to you and I. No telling how long this thing's going to go or what. But
you'd edit the crap out of it.
Well, I know, like, in past... Even, like, in Parker growing up, like, I had friends from SoCal, and there'd be something, a trend in SoCal. It'd hit Parker a year later.
Oh, right.
And I'm assuming things that were popular in the United States when it was exported, like when we were growing up, it would have been delayed by a year or two, right, before finally hit the UK. Now with social media and the internet, like, it's pretty instantaneous. I mean, we see trends that are slow, but it's still not like we're not talking years to catch
right.
up. It's like, oh, maybe a month or two later it'll get.
Yeah, because now the means of distributing those like memes or ideas or trends is digital. So it's immediate. I mean, yeah, you're right. Like the kid in rural Indiana is now right in the trend along with everybody else.
Just amazing how that's happened, but
it is
business. Yeah. I mean, everything is so quick now. It's so fast paced. Things change so quick.
And I think people who can't keep up are at a little bit of a disadvantage in a way that they weren't like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see major corporations and like to turn a ship like that big, it's just, I mean, it's so slow and you can see how sometimes like 2 years later, they're still trying to grasp on a trend that is over now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and well, it's like we've talked about, you know, radio and audio and just, you know.
Where media is going,
Where, you know, I guess where audio media is going, you know, and you've got, you know, AM and FM and Sirius and podcasting and so live internet radio now. And there's so many ways now. Facebook Live, I'm doing Facebook Live audio with every national show, you know, and it's like
crazy.
It's just weird how people,
I know,
it's
the new stuff, the new things. And yet here I am doing something that's actually fairly traditional. You know, I know filmmakers now who are on nothing but YouTube and, you know, they're producing a YouTube channel and reaching millions that way. And yet what I'm doing is fairly traditional in the sense of documentary filmmaking, like going, you know, doing the traditional thing of like talking face to face with people on camera. And, you know, I might do some new things with it. Hopefully I do. But, you know, otherwise, what's the point? Right. You want to always be innovating. But it's a traditional form, you know, and the way that this is going, it's kind of being distributed in a traditional way, too. Like we have it in theaters right now and screenings, you know, people are watching it. And so. It's just interesting how, like, I guess every project's probably different. Like, you can go, you know, you can go one way with one and then go traditional with everything else. But yeah, I mean, it's a hybrid thing.
Well, and it's funny too, like with theaters and, like it takes a special movie for me to go to theaters now. And usually my special movies are weird. It's like I haven't been to a movie in quite a while, but mm-hmm. I want to go see Tomb Raider this weekend because I was a fan of the first two. And
there you go.
Like,
yeah.
It's just like it's weird that Tomb Raider would be the movie that would get me out of the house to go to the theater, mm-hmm. but it is. And my wife will be like, no, you can take Addie because I don't want to go.
Well, and does it depend on how much of a movie buff you are?
Yeah.
I mean, because I love movies so much, I would almost rather go – you know, like when I'm in a different city, I'm there to work or something like that, I could be sightseeing what's unique about that city, but typically you'll find me in a movie theater that night because I just want to, I don't know, I like the seat, I like the comfort, I like watching that.
Now you've got those big leather recliners with the electric,
exactly.
Oh man, it's.
It's changed that all that well, and that's market pressure that caused that. They would never have done that. That's because they were having trouble filling the seats because people's home viewing experience is so good compared to what it used to be. Bigger screens,
everybody's
better sound.
Got a 75-inch TV now, or 70-inch, or whatever.
So why do you need to go to the movies? So now they have to up the standard of what to get you there. You know.
Yeah, and. Well, and the thing about theaters, too, is like when I was a kid, you didn't want to miss a good movie in a theater because it was literally like 8-9 months before it came out on VHS.
Yeah.
And now it's like I miss one in the theater. I'm like, within the next 2 months.
Yeah.
Unless it's a Star Wars that they can get, you know what I mean, a long run out of it in the theaters. Like most times I'm like, it'll be digital in 2 months. Like I can rent it for $5
right.
on iTunes. So
right, yeah.
I'm like, we'll just wait if I miss a big deal. But
no, it's so true. And I think that's retraining people on what to expect too. You know, like some people are just never going to, you know, they're never going to wait and do it that way. They're always going to just wait for the streaming because of that. And I think that's happened a little bit with my film because we had it for screening and different cities had it. You know, I think there were about 10 or 11 places that had it, you know, and you know, so if you weren't in Los Angeles or Philadelphia or somewhere like that, you probably couldn't see it. And so, you know, I think a lot of those people, even in those cities, they just were, oh, you know, it'll be out soon. We'll see it on online.
Well, I want to talk about the distribution process here in a minute. But first off, John Wright, you and I got sidetracked here. You've got the film Leaving My Father's Faith with Bart and Tony Campolo. And right. I got to be honest with you, this is something you and I have had. You and I have some pretty good discussions just on politics, religion, things like that. So
right.
This was something totally up your alley. Like, you know, yeah. And I know you've got kind of personal story that in a way ties to this as well. But, I mean, you know, Tony Campola, this is somebody that I've been familiar with. I mean, I remember, like, I think it was in The Thing, you know.
Years
Clinton's,
ago.
Clinton's, and you see him on TV. And, right, you know, right. It's just, I think everybody's familiar with this. I didn't know the backstory with his son.
Right.
And, you know, but to me, this whole thing, I mean, how did this come about? Because.
Well, so I'll give you the brief synopsis. Yeah. So Tony Campolo is this big preacher guy. You know, he's not quite the level of, like, Billy Graham, who just passed away. But he's. Big. I mean,
he's up there.
He's up there, and he's in his 80s. He's been a spiritual counselor to, like, presidents, and, you know, written like a million books on Amazon and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, this huge preacher guy that I was familiar with as a kid, you were familiar with, you know, just anyone who's even been on the outskirts of Christianity, a lot of people kind of know this guy as just being this big kind of preacher. And people who are non-religious, by the way, you know, you probably wouldn't be exposed to this guy. You probably never would have known. But I grew up in that household. My dad was a minister. So, you know, I had it kind of pounded into me. And Tony Campolo was the most entertaining speaker.
Oh, he's funny.
That I could think of, you know? Yeah, he is funny. If he missed his calling as a preacher, he could have been a comedian.
Absolutely.
Like, just funny, funny guy. And holds your attention. I mean, you can go on YouTube and find clips of Tony Campolo preaching. His son, so Tony's now in his 80s. His son is now in his 50s, Bart Campolo. And Bart worked with Tony for decades. Like, they were kind of in it together. And Bart would run a lot of his dad's ministries and that sort of thing. And it's this big thing. But what happened, the synopsis of my film and the whole reason this thing exists is because Bart, just a few years ago now, 2013, 14, discovered that he no longer believed in God. I mean, this wasn't like an overnight process, but it was something that over time he lost faith pretty much over a period of time. And he and the big catalyst was he decided, I don't know. I mean, I suppose the decision is, you know, do I keep this to myself and just, like, keep motoring on in public and act the part, or do I be honest and be authentic and change my life because of this?
You know, and I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm going to, because listening to this process through him and his parents, I saw, and this is so weird, but I saw a lot of similarities with somebody possibly being gay or lesbian and coming out.
Right,
you know,
right,
because
sure.
It was like, especially in that household, like it was a taboo, right?
Yeah, yeah, you're keeping this thing to yourself.
Yeah,
that
you know, and yeah. I almost felt like, and I have no idea what it's like to come out. You know,
right.
I don't want to say that I even have any idea what it's like to do that. But to me, on the outside looking in, I'm like, just hearing him talk and then hearing, I mean, we've got a lot of close friends in that community. It felt like there was some similarities there with him coming out. Like,
definitely.
It was a big deal, and he was struggling with it.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, and he makes that comparison, too. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sitting at my desk one morning reading the New York Times or something like that. I was on the news, and, you know, because I do that for a living. In the afternoon, I talk about the news. And saw this story. Bart Campolo, son of Tony Campolo, announces that he's no longer a believer in the Christian faith. And I knew that guy was a, you know, a preacher guy. Like, he had been out there saying, you know, preaching about God to all these, like, conferences full of, like, thousands of young people and stuff like
yeah.
that all around the world. And so I thought, oh man, there's got to be a story there. And my first question to myself was, I wonder what his dad thinks about this. You know, I mean, this has got to be a huge, like, a rocking of the boat in that household, like you said. So, it turned out that I had a couple of friends who knew Bart. I had a friend who was a journalist at the BBC in Belfast, Northern Ireland. And he put me in touch with Bart, and I say, he's not that far away. He's in Los Angeles. And I'm like, okay, maybe you want to get coffee. So Bart says, hey, I've got half an hour this day. Let's meet up for coffee. And we talked about like our mutual friends and all this kind of stuff. But by the time we finished, it was 5 hours later. We got along like a house on fire. Like Bart's a cool guy, you know.
He seemed like he's just a very.
You'd get along with him. Yeah. Everybody would get along with him. He's just like that kind of like agreeable personality, you know, a guy that you. I guess the word is charismatic. You know, someone that kind of like his dad. You know,
yeah.
You look at both of them, and they're people you'd want to hang around with or have a beer with or whatever. And so, you know, we end up in this documentary process because I kind of say to them, listen, this is a story that, you know, right now you have a moment to capture some of the conversations going on between you two, because it's a very, I mean, this father-son thing is huge, and then the, you know, theist-atheist thing is huge. The fact that, you know, how do you get, what are all the questions around that story? So I just wanted to tell the story, and I thought it'd be a very interesting film. And so being the fact that I do that, you know, documentary films, I proposed the project. We got initial funding to go and do it. And within like 3 weeks or 4 weeks after that coffee, we were already shooting. I mean, we shot that thing in Philadelphia. We took like a week, and just every day that it was just
the three
of us.
I remember when you went back there originally. I mean,
yeah.
You were so darn excited too. You
well,
know?
Yeah, because it's, I mean, you live for this kind of, you know, I'll tell you what it is, Jim. Like if you, I mean, you can think about having two people who are really articulate, right, and know what they're talking about and have a difference and like are able to go back and forth about it and have a conversation, that's one thing. That's really, really good. But then you add the layer that A, they're a father and son, and B, they're so watchable and so like entertaining and charismatic and interesting to look at and expressive and all this kind of stuff. And you just think to yourself, oh, this is gold. You know, this is movie gold. And it is, I think. I mean, it's really good to watch. You could just sit and listen to them talk all day.
And, you know, the thing that I loved about it, too, is you never know in a situation. And you know, we've had this conversation where people, you know, on Facebook, you can't, you know, people get so irrational and it's like, you know, so emotional about things.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell that they were emotional, but they had a respect level for each other, and they listened and they heard each other out, and they didn't immediately
right.
just fire back. Just they were really processing what the other person
exactly.
said.
And exactly.
They, you know, and I like to say, don't listen to respond, you know, listen, you know, listen
exactly.
to understand. And
yeah,
they
yeah.
were listening to understand each other before they made their response. And it was a very intelligent conversation both ways.
Yeah. But what is it that our parents always used to say? Like, you know, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason, you know,
yeah.
you got to listen. They're really good at that, and they're a good model of a conversation, especially now in this political era where, like, everyone's at each other's throats. It seems like no one's listening to anybody, and we're just all, you know, like, screaming at each other. And this is the antidote to that, you know, about the religious conversation. And, I mean, that's an interesting enough one, especially for anybody who grew up religious and finds that maybe they're not quite on the same page as their parents were about it whenever they were kids, and they're kind of like processing that quietly. I got an email yesterday morning, a guy who had seen this film, and he goes, I am not exaggerating. I should read you this email. He goes, I'm not exaggerating. I have been waiting for this film for 55 years. This guy in England, he watched it, and he's like, I can't even tell you. Like, he says, this is so important to me, because I've been processing this internally for decades, and it's never been outside of myself in this way. You know? And so, yeah, it's that kind of conversation, you know? The kind of conversation, too, that, like, many of us don't really have, because we're living our lives. We're running businesses. We're doing our thing. We're, you know, enjoying the world and doing whatever we need to do to survive. We're not necessarily, like, diving deep on life's ultimate questions. You know what I mean?
Well, we're not diving deep, and it's finding the right people that you can have that conversation with, you know,
right,
because
right.
a lot of people... you know, you bring up Christianity, and you know, and a lot of people, to be honest with you, they haven't read what they think they believe,
right?
Or you know, and it's just, it's one of those things where it's just, what do you mean you don't believe? You have. It's like it's an uncomfortable thought for them. To
Is
know
there
that
another option?
Yeah, you know
yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's like, what do you mean? You know, I'm like, well, have you read this and this. And, you know, and I've struggled with a lot, especially the past 4 years, just with stuff that's gone on in my personal life, you know, with religion. And I've read a lot of the Bible. You know, at this point, I don't know what I believe, but I know that there's a lot of questions there.
But that's a good position. Like, I listened to this guy the other day. I can't remember his name. Robin someone. He's a professor somewhere. And he's like, why is it that we all have to have an opinion on everything? You know, like whatever topic comes up, you're supposed to weigh in, you know? You're supposed to give your 2 cents. Oh, well, I think, and give your pre-canned thing. It's almost like word association, you know? You say Trump, I say, you know, and like there's no one who just sits back and goes, you know, I don't really know. I haven't formed an opinion on that yet. I don't really have an opinion. I'm still thinking about it. No one ever says that.
Yeah, that's me. In politics, I'm the same way right now. I know my feelings, and you know what? I don't fit in any hole.
Right.
It's like you've got the left, you've got the right, you've got this, you've got that. And I'm like, my beliefs don't fit in any spot right now. What am I? And it's kind of the same way with religion. You know, I'm just like, hey, I'm here. I've got my thoughts. But
that's good because it means you're a thinker. You know, and like we need more of that. You know, we need more people to just go, I'm processing. You know, one guy said that after watching this thing. He goes, I'm processing. I'm processing.
That's a good thing, though. It's stirring a conversation, right?
I think so. And so you could easily find talking heads. I mean, there are talking heads on everything, right? You know, I mean, look at cable news. It's just nothing but talking heads.
Right.
I mean, they do religious stories on cable news sometimes, you know, about, you know, between different kinds of belief or this or that or, you know, theology. And what they're looking for is just people to do the debate. Or do the issue. They're not looking at, like, the personal story. And I feel the same way about a lot of the stuff that you cover. Not the way you cover it. The way you cover it is awesome. But, like, if you look at, motorsports, you know, I see a lot of, like, media covering, say, off-road racing. But what I'm super interested in and I see covered not as much is personal stories about the people involved in off-road racing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to do with this film was not do like a debate film between like, is there a God or isn't there? Tony and Bart, go at it, and we find out by the end. You know, that's the opposite of what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do was to like listen to Bart's story and then listen to his dad's thoughts on it. And he challenges it, man. Like he goes, I don't know if that's the real motivation. I don't know if that's the real reason why you made this move. I think there might be some other alternative explanations. And like we deal with a few other alternative explanations in the film, you know, but we never really tell you by the end spoiler alert, there's no like right or wrong guy in this, you know?
Well, and that's what I thought was amazing about the way you did this film in the end. Like, you and I have had some pretty, you know, via social media in person, like, you know, our beliefs sometimes are complete opposite end of the spectrum. But at the end of the day, we can high five each other, give each other a hug and say, all right, we agree to disagree.
Right, of course.
You know, we're still friends. We're still good friends, you know. And with his father and son, you never knew. And at the end of the day, it was like, you know, the way it ended was, you know, it was amazing with the dad and, you know, the kings. And but I laughed and I go, you know, they're just agreeing to disagree. There's still love there.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's not like the dad goes, I disown you.
Yeah, they don't need to resolve all these questions.
No.
They don't need to, like, figure out who's right and who's wrong. They don't need to even do that. Why should anybody even want to do that?
Yeah.
Just, like, enjoy the process. You know, it's kind of like that old adage about it being, you know, the journey, not the destination. I think there's a little bit of that in this film too. You know, the fact that like all these questions are still out there. No one's got proof. You know, Tony Campolo, this big preacher for what, like over 50 years, tells you right in the film, A, I have no proof of anything that I'm saying, you know. B, I have doubts of my own. You know, this is not an absolute thing. So for people who are used to thinking in absolutes, this is going to crush that, and you're going to be – it turns it on its head.
Yeah. Well, and the truth is none of us really know until we die, right?
There you go.
So
– yeah.
But it was funny. One of the takeaways that I saw out of this, you know, was and I can't remember the exact terms he uses, but this was Bart, you know, and you know, he says, I believe in, you know, you know, helping the poor, loving people, you know, just treating people right, you know, and he says, those aren't Christian values. He goes, those are human values.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like he's changed his life and the way he approaches his life by not being a Christian now. He approaches it in very much the same way.
Yeah.
And I thought that was what was funny because, you know, whether you believe or you don't believe, we all should be acting about the same, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, I suppose that that's a kind of a response to the idea that, you know, if you don't believe in God, you know, or if you don't have like a religious, like a really fervent, like religious belief, then what's to stop you going and, you know, raping everyone that you want to rape, right? And Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller has a really good answer to that because he's actually an atheist. He goes, he says, I already am raping everybody I want to rape. Like, my number is zero. What's your number? You know, he goes, I don't have that. And I'm sure that, you know, there's an excellent conversation to be had about, like, you know, where do we get our morality from? All this kind of stuff all that is interesting stuff. But, you know, if you're a decent person, you know, if you're someone who values your fellow human being on any level, you know, you don't have these real dilemmas, I don't think, about, you know, who are you going to rape next? You know, I don't think that there's any. I don't think you get a carte blanche, whatever you believe. And Bart certainly is a very big proponent of all of that. Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, it's challenging. I would imagine that now I'm trying to think about your audience here. I don't know, you know, if there's a demographic of the Project Action audience, but I would imagine, and this is just throwing it out, I think that the average American is likes to at least think of themselves as being religious, or at least likes to think of themselves as being believers on some level,
yeah,
you know, in a higher power. Sometimes you hear that, or sometimes you hear they believe in the God of the Bible, but, you know, they never go to church or read the Bible. It's not that kind of faith that they hold. So I would imagine most of these people listening are probably believers on some level.
Well, believers in something. I mean, even
believers in something.
You know, and I talk to a lot of people, and you know, and they'll be telling me their beliefs, and you know, and you've got things like Buddhism, right? Where Buddhism is actually an atheistic religion. You know, where you're not actually worshiping somebody.
Or, there's no deity.
Yeah, there's no deity, and you know, I hear people, and it's, you know, you know, they, just because you don't believe in God or, you know, it doesn't mean you're not a religious person or a spiritual person, right?
Right,
just,
in some way, yeah.
Yeah, and there's so many religions all over the world that it's just, like you said, there's an interesting concept there. But
it is, yeah.
I think, you know, even when you start bringing karma into things, and you'd be like, oh, I'm an atheist, but I believe in karma. Well, you know, it's like we can tie that in here or there, you know, and it's...
Yeah, how does that work? You're an atheist, you don't believe in, you know, the afterlife or anything like that, but somehow, and you don't believe in a creator, but yet somehow the universe is conspiring to provide karma for good actions and bad actions, you know? I don't know. I mean, I suppose there's a naturalistic version of that where you can just be like, hey, you know, you reap what you sow in life, and, you know, wherever you put your energy, that's what you get back, you know? But all those kinds of things are cool conversations to have, and sometimes they get lost because we're too busy with other things. Not that necessarily I'm saying that everybody should be sitting around having these conversations all the time either. You know, I love my own pastimes as much as anybody, but this is the kind of stuff that does energize me in terms of, like, my work, you know, like the kinds of stuff that I like to do with film. And so, yeah, it ends up being pretty interesting, I think. And if you see the poster, it's like it's called Leaving My Father's Faith. That's the name of the film. And it's like Bart and Tony walking through a field of Jenga towers, like massive. You know that wooden blocks game, yeah. Jenga?
I thought that was such a great tie-in with the film because every time you pull out...
Yeah, and it's like a tower of Jenga representing faith, right? And so every little block is an element of that. And if you have a doubt over one, maybe that block comes out. You know, and what happened for Bart was, of course, too many blocks came out and the whole tower came down. But I like the poster that is made by a poster art company in L.A. who put these blocks like falling, almost looks like they're going to be crushed by them, you know. But everyone has those blocks in their life, man. You know, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, well, and after, so post-film, right, and I know this is out now, but I know you've been, you know, taping and you know, for quite a while, you know, they wrote a book, right, together.
Yeah, what happened was after we finished filming, they started to write a book based on the conversation that we recorded for the film. And so they ended up writing HarperCollins published it. So it was a big publisher. And I ended up working a little bit with the publisher and stuff like that because they wanted to do some, cross promotion and stuff like that. So they write kind of like a chapter each, you know. That is a little bit more focused on the actual points of debate than the film is. You know, the points of debate come up in the film, but they're not the main point. You know, ultimately, too, like what I've discovered screening this thing is that people laugh a lot throughout. Like, I was just in L.A. last week, and we had an L.A. premiere, and it was a pretty packed house, and I'm standing at the back, and it seems like just about every 2 or 3 minutes, there's a big laugh from the crowd. Like, people really find it entertaining, and the book isn't quite like that. The book is a little bit more serious and a little bit more methodical, and, you know, they take, like, a chapter each, and then Bart answers Tony, and then the next chapter, Tony answers Bart, and that kind of thing, and the movie isn't really quite like that, but it is a project that came out at the same time. The book is called Why I Left, Why I Stayed, by the two of them. Yeah, Bart and Tony Campola.
And have you talked with, and I know obviously you're closer with Bart than you are with Tony, but have you talked, post-film, and how are they in their relationship? And then, not only that, but what has this done? I mean, obviously it spurred conversation. I'm sure they're getting feedback from that, right?
Oh, yeah, man. They love how it's turned out. And there were weird moments in there where I didn't necessarily think they would. And, I mean, you know, my job as an editor is not to make a film that Bart and Tony love, you know? Like, that's not the point. You know, they could hate it, and I might have still done my job, you know? but it turned out that they did like it. We were about a month and a half ago now in Philadelphia for the actual premiere, which was a big kind of event. The reason Philadelphia is because that's where Tony's based his entire life and work and all that kind of stuff. And so a lot of people who were relevant to Tony over there who wanted to go.
Yeah.
And so it ended up that being the place for the premiere. But, I'm sitting there with them, and just before the film starts, you know, we're sitting there, and there's some previews that come up. And so there's a full house, 300 people or whatever in that room. And the previews start coming up on the screen before the thing, and it's like, coming soon. And Bart leans over to Tony. He says, coming soon, Tony's funeral. And they just have this, like, playful energy. And, of course, Tony cracked up laughing, you know, because they just have this kind of, like, awesome – well, I think you see it in the film,
yeah.
Right? They're kind of, like, playful with each other, and they have a good rapport. That continues. So, I mean, none of this and you know, it's not necessarily like that. If you have, a religious father or mother, and then you decide, I'm not into that, that can actually be a point of real contention where people can't get over it and where it's a big rift between them. In Bart and Tony's case, that's just not there. They're solid, you know.
Well, and, you know, there was parts in there that really got me, you know, with Bart, he was talking about, basically how he was, even when he was, quote, a Christian, he was considered like a heretic and things like that because, you know, of his universalistic views and, things like that. Like, it brought up, and even Tony was talking about, you know, about people who, quote, aren't believers, but they do good work, still, you know, quote, getting into heaven type of thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, there was so many conversations in that I really hadn't ever heard, because you get certain people, it's like, you don't believe, you're not going to heaven.
Right, that's it.
You, there's only one way, you know.
Yeah. It's the one answer, you know.
Yeah.
There's no other options.
Yeah.
Well, of course, all the way through church history, there have been all kinds of positions on that. You know, some major church fathers believed that everyone was going to heaven, you know. So there's all kinds of stuff in there that people I don't think are exposed to on a regular basis, because, you know, all they know is the pastor down the street and what he says, you know.
Not
that there's anything wrong with the pastor down the street necessarily, but, you know, it's kind of like you might not get the whole picture. And, you know, the other thing is this. Bart has this line that he likes to say where he talks about, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Malcolm Gladwell popularized this idea that it takes 10,000 hours to be an expert at anything. $10,000 of practice. If you can put $10,000 behind the wheel of a racing car, you know, you'll be an expert racer. If you can put 10,000 hours behind, you know, music, then you'll be the Beatles, you know, like whatever it might happen to be. And it's all about practice, you know. And this was a theory. I don't know how true the theory is or not. But Bart's theory is that, you know, the only people who actually put 10,000 hours into Christianity are preachers. You know, they're the only people that actually have the time sit and think about it and work through it and process it or write about it and preach sermons about it, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and his line is, well, you know, by the time you get to the 10,000th hour, you know, you realize it's not true. But he said, you know, Tony and Bart have this kind of, they've thought about it enough where all of those options they're familiar with. So things you're talking about that come up throughout the course of the film that you might not have been familiar with, of course, you know, at the 600th hour, you come upon this one, and at the, you know, the 1800th hour, you come across this one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I found it, you know, it was exactly what I wanted it to be, and
good.
It was just a good conversation between, you know, between father and son. And
good.
I'm glad you liked it.
I
didn't quite know which direction it was going to go, and I don't think you probably did when you were getting into it either, right? Because you didn't.
No.
I mean, you had an idea, but you didn't. You knew what your direction you wanted it to go, but you get two guys sitting in a room, and
that's
stuff
right.
can hit the fan.
It can go off to all kinds of directions. The only thing that I wanted to make sure was that by the end of it, and this was kind of a commitment from the beginning. You know, I think with every documentary film that I've done, I've kind of set, like, rules for myself at the beginning, you know. And one of the rules on this thing was I don't want a viewer to be able to get to the end of it and be able to tell what side the filmmaker believed, you know, like what the beliefs of the filmmaker were. I didn't want them being able to say, John Wright, you know, is this, you know, Christian thing, or John Wright is an atheist. I didn't want them to be able to tell from the film itself. I wanted it to be fairly evenly presented where both sides were really strong so that by the end you could just
call fake news.
Yeah, exactly. And then it leaves it up to the viewer, you know? Yeah.
No, and I think you did a good job of that because I mean, I know what your personal beliefs are, but there was no way of, you know, by watching that what your beliefs were. I think that was, you did a phenomenal job of that, staying 100% neutral.
Well, and so many people after these screenings came up to me afterwards and they're like, oh, I'm so relieved. I was really worried that Tony was going to get pounded or, you know, that Bart was going to get, you know, crushed. And they said, they loved the balance of it. So, yeah, I'm pleased about that.
It was a good balance. It definitely was.
No, I'm glad you liked it because I was wondering how it would go over. You know, part of this is I know that there are a lot of people like me that kind of grew up in that world and who, I don't know, the Christian thing, it's a familiar conversation, in other words, you know, that we've actually been having these conversations before. I mean, I went to school with a lot of people who, you know, we would have, like, lunch times where we'd, like, just get into huge, big debates over different aspects of this stuff. And so, you know, but to people who didn't necessarily, that wasn't their focus in life, you know, like you, that was never your focus in life, but you still found something out of the film. And that's, to me, the real test of the film.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in, you know, in churches and things like that, and going to church on Sundays and Bible schools and studies and, you know, and I know for a lot of people, like, it's not even a question you bring up, like, you know, and I'm not saying that's how my parents were, but I, you know, they
no, that's right. You don't bring it up.
Yeah. You just don't bring it up. It's like, yeah, you don't talk about that.
Not only don't you talk about it, but like you're too busy to think about it.
Yeah.
That's what I
really have those thoughts.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, and there are a category of people who are kind of maybe, I don't know if you want to use the word more like academically minded or something, or more like intellectually driven, but, they're the minority. I think most people are getting on with their lives. The stuff they're really passionate about is the stuff you cover on your podcast or other things. Yeah. It's not necessarily like, you know, questions about God or, you know, the universe. You know,
don't
that's
have
not,
time for that, right?
Don't have time for it, man. Don't have time for it. Too busy getting ready for the Mint 400.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So I got a question, and this is just me. I got two questions. First off, how – you and I mean, obviously, we live in Parker. This thing was and I, you and I have a really good grasp of our local community.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you guys had a premiere at the theater here. I was out of town on that weekend, so I wasn't able to go.
Oh, right. Yeah.
What was the feedback locally from that? Because we have a very there's a lot of churches in this small community and a lot of people that are...
This is an interesting town, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and so I was just curious how the feedback from this film came from them, you know?
I mean, it was good. Everyone really liked it. Had a lot of thoughts on it. We did a little lunch after at a friend's house, and a lot of people came by. And you know, it was funny. The results there were very similar to, like, you know, what they were in L.A. or in Philadelphia or anywhere else. You know, people kind of tend to respond with a certain amount of sameness, you know, to the thing. And, you know, there were people who were atheists at that local little screening, and there were people who were really, really committed Christians, too.
Yeah, I was going to say it was probably overly Christian audience, correct? Or
there were at least two pastors in that room, you know?
That's great, though.
Yeah, and they both had good things to say about it. I don't know what their private thoughts were, you know? I mean,
yeah.
For pastors, this stuff tends to be a little uncomfortable, you know? The question came up at one point, like, how many churches would want to do screenings? And we have had some churches do screenings, you know, around the country, around the world, actually. I think there was just one in the Netherlands. But, you know, you look at churches and their responses, yeah, you have to have a certain kind of church, you know, a church that is used to, has the toolbox to ask those kinds of questions.
And answer them right.
And answer them right, yeah.
Because it's going to spur conversation, and you've got to have the right...
That's right.
You've got to have the right minister that's willing to take on those questions.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You can't bring a nail file to a power tool fight. You know. Yeah. You have to have the right tool. So yeah, I think the pastors liked it, but you know, who knows what they really, you know, what all of their thoughts were. I did get some, you know, some points of debate from people afterwards that are valid. You know, all of the questions that come up are valid, whatever they might happen to be.
So, and this is me just being, you know, geek on stuff like this. How did you, you know, and I get this question all the time with me. Hey, how'd you get in national syndication? How'd you do this? How did you get this thing picked up and into theaters? Like, that's my question for you. This is just me on the whole geek side. Like,
yeah.
How did you make those connections? Because, I mean, you and I, we grew up in the same town, you know, and you and I have talked. Like, it's kind of amazing what there's a few people in this town that are doing some really big things outside the community. But to me, to get picked up by all these theaters and things like that, like,
yeah,
that's a big accomplishment, John.
But Parker is an interesting town. It's not a typical – when we say it's a small town, I think we give the wrong impression, because a typical small town doesn't have
– the people coming and going.
The comings and goings of this town, and, like, the big names coming and going. And, you know, by the way, I just watched that Jimmy Kimmel bit on Havasu. Did you see where
– No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, there's a whole thing that he did at the Oscars about Lake Havasu and ended up being a conversation on his show and stuff like that. So it's just up the road from us. But yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting place, really, Parker. It's for people who don't know Parker, Arizona, it's just a small, if you look at it on a map, it looks like there's a couple thousand people. It's not the story. Like, the story is the hundreds of thousands who are always around, coming and going, and, you know, the kind of the unique DNA of this place, you know?
We're talking about a melting pot. We
yeah,
are definitely a melting pot.
Definitely, and a racing culture and the whole thing. I mean, it's very interesting. So, just partners, you know, how to do that, how to get into theaters and stuff with a good project is just partners and knowing the right people. And, you know, I have a lot of... I just know a lot of really interesting people, and I'm introduced through those people to other interesting people, and you end up kind of...
It's much the same as me. It's just somebody knows somebody. So what is it, the five... Kevin Bacon, like the
five... Oh, the 5 degrees of separation?
Yeah, separation or something like that, you know, and it's one of those, like, you...
It's true, yeah.
Somebody
it's true.
Knows somebody who knows somebody, and...
Well, and because Tony Campolo is friends with the Clintons... I know that there's a very good possibility that Bill and Hillary Clinton will end up watching this film, and I'd be fascinated. I'll never hear what they think about it.
No,
but I'd be fascinated to be in that room, you know, and be a fly on the wall. And so you talk about the degrees of separation. Yeah, this thing goes all over because it's that kind of way. You know, Tony was friends with Billy Graham, who just died. You know, he'll never see it. But, yeah, it's just it's one of those.
Oh, you never know. It could be in heaven watching it.
There you go. There you go. I don't know if they have Netflix up there. Actually, I hope it would. That's the hard part, is to get a thing like Netflix to do it. I mean, it's on Amazon right now as we talk.
That's going to be my next question. Where can people find this?
Look on Amazon, because I think Amazon Video should have it. If not, just use the website, campolofilm.com, C-A-M-P-O-L-O, campolofilm.com. Or the full title of the film is Leaving My Father's Faith. That's also a .com. It goes to the same place, Leaving My Father's Faith. So that's where to get it. But, Amazon's easier than Netflix, because guess what? On Amazon, it's people renting or buying, right? On Netflix, it's included with their subscription, so Netflix has to pay you up front. And so that's a harder thing for them to commit to than, say Amazon saying, oh yeah, if we sell five of them, then very good, we'll split it with you. But if you sell 500,000, we also split that with you. So,
not really much of a risk for them.
No. But all these means of distribution, I just have to give it to those guys at Netflix. What's the name of that guy? I can't remember the guy that founded Reed, right? Reed. Yeah, I just find it amazing what they've done with that platform. Because I remember, I'm sure you do, when it was just DVDs, they would come in the mail.
Yeah.
But they were always playing the long game. They knew that the internet would kill everything else, except like direct through that pipe to people's TVs or whatever. And they knew long before the speed existed to do it, the internet speed, and long before the smart TVs and stuff existed, they just were playing the long game. Hey, yeah, we'll build a subscriber base, sending you discs in the mail.
Then I think they started it out with free. Okay, well, we're going to give you streaming for free.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, okay.
We'll just pile that in too.
We'll just add that in. Then it became like, oh, $1 a month or $2 additional in addition to your DVDs. But they slowly, like you said, they built the user base.
Yeah,
and then they just slowly transitioned people. People didn't even know what was happening.
Fast forward, and now they own the world. And so you're kind of like, oh, like those guys are brilliant. Like they really knew. Reed Hastings, I think, is the guy's name. Just came back to me. Reed Hastings, I think that's the guy's name. But yeah, brilliant. And now the good thing is content creators like me can take advantage of those platforms that are now built, to distribute that kind of content. And, I always saw this as a streaming thing. I didn't ever see it really in theaters. So the fact that it was in, a bunch of theaters is very cool to me. I never saw that. I never really cared too much about that, although it was really nice sitting in those rooms like last week in L.A. with the huge crowd and everything in Beverly Hills. Like, that was really nice. And here, meeting so many people and speaking to them. But truth be told, it's just nice to be able to reach people where they're at. And I would love for people just to watch the film online, because, they're in their space, man.
And this is something, too, like... I didn't even think about that, but this is a film that a lot of people won't want to be in public.
Yeah.
No, but I'm serious.
Like, no, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
It's something like, it's almost, it's something that they can do in their private space.
They don't have to be asked public questions about it, think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
It's something they can consume, and it's between them and
I never thought about that.
But, some people, this whole thing might be a private thing, but... I'll be interesting, and I don't know. I'm sure, obviously, at some point you'll get to see Amazon numbers. I don't know, like Netflix numbers, if you'll get to see those. But it would be interesting to see, how numbers are,
how many people it reaches. Yeah, and of course, on Amazon, people are going to have to spend a few bucks to see it. That'll determine.
Is it included with Prime?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. And that Prime is like Amazon's version of Netflix, right? Where, it's included. Yeah. And so that's a higher bar. I mean, who knows? It may go there. We just don't know at this point. It's one of those things where the more buzz there is, the more interest there is from those kinds of people. But, honestly, I think it'll reach who it's supposed to reach. I don't know. There's a lot of interest that I get back from it. And I think it's an interesting conversation. But then, I'm very biased, too, towards, I tend to make documentaries about things I'm interested in. By the way, the word documentary is terrible, because it sounds boring right off the bat.
It does.
You know what I mean?
And it's funny. It's like I go to Netflix, and the first thing I do is go to the documentaries. Oh, what's new?
Yeah,
I don't go to action or
sci-fi.
But that's because
you've discovered that documentaries aren't boring. But the old word, like what a documentary was, I don't know, 20 years ago. I love some old documentaries, but largely, especially TV documentaries, they sucked. You know,
they were horrible.
Yeah, they were horrible. Or like, I certainly wasn't interested in them. But there's a level of cinema now in documentary, and there's a level of like what you can do with the format. It just makes me super excited.
Well, it's still storytelling. It's just real storytelling instead of.
It's real instead of fiction. But it's also, I mean, there have been some great documentaries in the last number of years. I mean, I think about things that just blow my mind, you know. And so I just love the format now. You know, I get excited about the format of documentary filmmaking, you know. It's cool.
Yeah, no, I like it too. So what's up next for you? Obviously, this film, you know, this project is on the downhill slide at this point.
Yeah, it's into promotion, and then I'm kind of out of the way of it for the most part. There's a team in LA working on that, all that stuff, and so I just kind of get to have conversations about it like this, and work on the other stuff. I'm just doing so many things. I'm doing like too many things at once, kind of thing. You know,
you and me. It's like I'm like I need to hire a team of people. I just can't afford the team of people.
Exactly, and I also think I need to know how to say no better. You know, I need to know how to tell people, I can't. You know, or like I'm not really interested. I need to know how to say those words, and I'm not good at that. So I say yes to too many things.
Well, and then having a, you know, because I know you've done films before, but having something, and I would say this is pretty high profile, especially with the people involved. Like, it
Absolutely.
Probably opens more doors, right? So now it's like, hey, John, why don't you come over here and help us with this? Or
exactly.
That?
And if you don't develop that gatekeeping technique at that point, then you're sunk, you know? Yeah. So I try very hard to kind of manage and do the right things. I'm doing some things, you know, kind of privately for different people, you know, like as a client. Been working with the Colorado River Indian Tribes, which is really
You've
interesting.
Done some cool stuff with them.
Yeah, the Mojave Tribe. By the way, those just went up online, critfilms.org. They put all three of them up.
I saw that. I saw like I don't know, Sparker Live or somebody posted something up.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's just those are special projects because they're oral tradition projects of tribes that haven't had anything documented a lot of the time before. So like the Mojave tribe, you know, there's like 15 or less fluent Mojave speakers left in the world, you know, people who actually speak the language. And they're trying, you know, feverishly to try to teach it to the next generation. And, of course, it's almost impossible. So it's kind of documenting a dying language in some ways, and the efforts to revive it. Same with the music, you know, a lot of the old songs that the Mojaves used to sing, and now, you know, it's all going away. So stuff like that, you know, there's all kinds of projects. I'm doing one about there's a film that's in development right now that I'm working on, which is about the authority of the President of the United States, whoever it happens to be, to launch nuclear weapons. You know, we all know that, like, the football gets carried around behind the president, right? And, like, at any given moment, you know, with a few minutes to go, he can authorize a nuclear weapon. And what we find out is he doesn't have to ask anybody. Everyone else around him can disagree with him. The Secretary of Defense can be like, no, it's a bad idea. And he can still do. He still has the authority to launch thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons all at once. So if you had, like, a suicidal president, you know, a homicidal and suicidal president, you know, we might be in real trouble. Or, you know, a lot of people worry about the thing with North Korea, which may or may not be sorting itself out.
Seems like it's getting a little better, hopefully, fingers crossed.
We'll see. And, you know, maybe Trump deserves some props there. I don't know. But, yeah, this goes to the question of what are the checks and balances? And it revolves around a guy who, like, decades ago during the Cold War, asked this question. He's a major in the Air Force, an Air Force major, and he asked this question, you know, about the checks and balances at the top, the checks and balances on the president. They asked him to put it in writing, so he put it in writing, and it was the beginning of the end of his military career because it was such a dangerous question for the military. They just didn't want to have anything to do with it, and he ended up being discharged, you know. I interviewed him for this project, and he's an amazing guy. The journalist Ron Rosenbaum wrote a whole book dedicated to that guy. His name is Harold Herring, and it called him an unsung hero of the Cold War because he asked that very important question about, all the way through, can one person really start and end World War III on their own? And just by getting enough people to vote for them in an election, the answer seems to be yes. So that's a concern to some people, and I think probably rightly so. You'd want ideally a little bit more check and balance. Of course, the problem with that is if you have to check with anybody else, the length of time that it takes to check with that other person may be a factor in whether you can actually effectively retaliate or not if someone's, shooting at us. And so there are big questions there too. That's a shorter film though.
Well, and correct. I mean, the president, they say hits the button or whatever, but technically it's the guy at one of those, there's so many moral issues there. I don't know. It's
right. And it's very interesting. If you're the guy that has to turn the key, right? Like you're down in the silo and those guys are down there for decades sometimes, they're not actually sitting around. That's a
watching I Love Lucy reruns on the TV.
Yeah. They're not actually sitting around. They've got a lot to do. They're doing, but everything they're doing is about, the maintenance of those systems and the training for what they're doing. And it's all in preparation for turning this magic key. And once you turn the key, I was in this missile silo 3 weeks ago as part of research for this project. I'm in the control center, I'm standing behind the chair where the guy sits and turns the key. And in front of him, there's a little light and it says liftoff. And as soon as that light comes on, that missile is off. And man, there's no way to turn it around. There's no oops. You can't call it back. As soon as you turn that key, it's going to its target. And, the target is classified in this case. I think it's probably somewhere in the Soviet Union, the old Soviet Union when this thing was active. But, it's just a crazy, you get that launch order and you see it. And finally, after decades, it's the right code. And it's the code that means launch. And you don't get to pick up a phone and talk to anybody. Should I really do this? You don't get to talk to anybody. Your orders are just to follow through immediately. Because, the idea is we only have a few minutes to spare. We might be knocked out. So it's kind of crazy stuff. I mean, once you start going down that rabbit hole, you're in a whole world of apocalypse .
I read an article, too, not too long ago. Well, it was a while back, a year or two ago. But isn't our nuclear missile silos and stuff like that, they use, 30-, 40-year-old technology, right? Because it's unhackable. It's not connected to the outside world, correct? It's it's not like they're hooked up to the internet or anything like that, from what I understand. It's all self-contained, so nobody can hack it.
At those silos?
Yeah.
Yeah, here's what's really interesting. And I didn't know this. So let's assume that, we're under attack. Any second now, there's going to be a bomb drop and, everything up here is gone, right? Underneath the ground, there's an antenna sticking out of the ground. That antenna is now gone. So what do? You want to keep connection to the command structure so that if you have to launch, then you know. They have a second and third antenna that are both in their own hardened silos. Separate from the rocket, at great expense, these other antenna systems that you press a button, and another silo door opens up, and an antenna comes out of the ground, and it's a completely separate unit, and then they've got a backup to that. So I mean, here's what struck me being down there, and this is way off the beaten path, but I'll just do the 10-second version. What struck me was all of this expense. All of these resources, all of this energy, all of this intellectual power, the best scientists, the best minds, all thinking about this, all involved in this, spending probably over time trillions of dollars on these systems that are all just escalated versions of what we did on the playground when someone grabbed a bigger rock, and wanted to throw it at you. And so It's a crazy thought to start to realize, you're walking into these things. He describes how the blast doors are a certain amount of thickness and a certain amount of steel so that, like, nothing can penetrate. And you're just thinking, oh, my God, like, we had thousands of these, you know? The amount of expense that we put into that, like, escalating posture, it, just to be scary, just to kind of, like, not become a target, and basically to sit there and look big and scary and just exist so that, like, the enemy would know that we have it and we can use it, is just insane to me. Like, the sheer, if you think about it, it's like, what are we doing? You know? But it's necessary in the real world. And so it's a really interesting thing. You wouldn't want it not to exist, I'll tell you that. And yet, at the same time, do you really even think it's smart or intelligent? Not really. Like, it's very, at some level, all this aggression is very, very dumb. You know, it's very caveman-like. You know, it's kind of like the technologically advanced, extremely expensive version of a caveman with a slingshot.
Well, and I think what's got people worried too, you know, just, and this is a whole nother rabbit hole, like you said, but it's like, I've always felt for the longest time, you know, there's a lot of superpowers that have, you know, nukes, India, China, Russia, us, you know, the list goes on, but all of us are pretty competent. Even Iran, you know, they've got nukes. Nobody's actually going to shoot them.
Because no one's suicidal.
No, but I think what got people scared was North Korea nukes. Like, I think he's nuts enough to actually push the trigger, to push the button. And I think this is what got, like, everybody for the longest time is like, yeah, everybody's got him. Nobody's going to use him. Who cares?
Right, right.
Now it's like, everybody's got him. This one guy's got him, but he's crazy enough to use him. So what do we do?
Yeah, well, our generation grew up after the Cold War, so we don't have the same level of fear that some of our older listeners right now might know, because, like, they actually had to go under their desks at school in drills about this stuff, and they've been thinking about it for a long time. You and I, we never had that thought, like, at any moment the world might end. I mean, if we had it, it was abstract. But mutually assured destruction, I think, is what they call it, right? MAD. That works, oddly, you know? You kind of wish there was a better system or something, but it actually works to have the concept that, listen, you know, you kill us, we kill you. It's that simple. We have the capability. The fact that we had to do all this stuff, like literally send things into space and back down in order to try to, you know, make this happen, is ridiculous on its face, but here we are. And, like, we are all in the same posture. So, you know, we're always watching you. You're watching us. We're all good, right? Like, let's do some trade. Let's think about some other stuff. Let's, you know, do you want a McDonald's? Sure. Well, you know,
yeah, we can franchise you.
Yeah. Do you want to see this movie, Leaving My Father's Faith? So,
I can promise you that film will never be shown in North Korea. I can promise you that I hate to break it to you, buddy. You can be in Norway and the UK and US, Canada.
Which is a shame, because I was really counting on that North Korean play, you know?
Yeah, which is, you know. Religion, that's a conversation the North Koreans should have. But
they should, because basically that guy, that Kim Jong-il, he is their Kim Jong-un, right?
Yeah.
He's their god. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the way they hold it, they literally, I saw this old, speaking of like TV documentaries that suck, I watched this old one that actually didn't suck, because it was about a surgeon, an eye surgeon, I think, or something, or a team of eye surgeons who were brought into North Korea to fix people's cataracts. So they went and did all this cataract surgery to these North Koreans. And when they took the bandages off their eyes and were able to see for the first time, some of them in like decades, they couldn't see. And now they can see, right? Sounds like the Bible, you know, I was blind and now I can see. They're like, they get on their knees. You and I would be like, oh, my God, thank you to the eye surgeon who came from, you know, out of country to come and, like, fix our eyes.
You're amazing.
You're amazing. You know what they do in North Korea? They get down on their knees and they face a picture of Kim Jong-il, I think, at the time. And they go, oh, thank you, Kim Jong-il. Thank you. We can't believe that you came and fixed our eyes. And, like, the surgeon's standing there going, what the hell? You know? They believe that he is in control of everything. He's God. You know, they literally worship him. Now, I don't know if they do it out of fear. I mean, I'm sure if I did it over there, I'd be doing it out of fear. but if I did it at all, I'd be doing it out of fear, right? If I were suddenly dropped into North Korea. But those things are weird, you know, kind of like the dictatorship idea and the whole, you know, the whole thing. So, yeah, I don't know. Kim Jong-un, I think, honestly, he's not a dummy.
No, he's very smart.
I think he's probably not I think he's probably not suicidal. My take on why would he want nuclear weapons if he's not suicidal is, or he doesn't plan to use them, is the same reason probably that, you know, some other countries have wanted them, is that he wanted to be a big boy, you know, wanted to play at the big boys table, wanted to be respected like Russia and China and Iran and these other places, and said, hey, you know, I'm in a position of weakness over here on this Korean peninsula. I need them to be at the table. Yeah. And so I don't necessarily have like a huge apocalyptic fear of the North Koreans using their nukes, but I do think that's an interesting question. I mean, ultimately, I think we'll probably end up with a nuclear armed North Korea. I mean, it's just the way.
At some point,
it's just my bet. Just my bet. The long term bet. But I think that it is an interesting question, especially on our end. What we have to think about, I think, is that process, man. Like, does it really make sense for one guy to be able to launch World War III? I think the whole idea is kind of absurd. And I would like there to be. It would make me feel a lot better, whoever the president is, if it were. It was a little harder to start World War III.
And this is where you and I go get off on some crazy stuff. And I agree with you. And there's so much happening in the world today. It's just like China removing term limits. That deal just happened. People don't realize. Oh well, you know, they don't realize he's going to be there forever. Now he's king of China.
Yeah, basically, right.
And you know, I just things like that, little things that are going on in the world, and most people don't pay attention. And I'm like, but they don't realize the ramifications of that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's
yeah, and I'm like an eternal optimist, and I don't know if I got that from my Christian upbringing or what it was. I don't know why I feel optimistic. Like I can't tell you. Because, you know, you're right. If you look at some of the things in the world, it doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense to be just, like, blindly optimistic. But I do feel a lot of optimism. I feel like usually humanity's better nature wins out in most things over the long term, you know. And I don't mean, you know, there are a lot of things, like, if you look at how social media has kind of destroyed civil discourse rather than helped it. Like, we all thought it was going to... Once the internet went out there and we all had free access to the internet, that's democracy. That's given people, you know, a lot of conversational power and, you know, the power to the people. And that's good. Well, it turns out that it's got a really dark side. But I think that that's temporary, or at least I hope it is. I think that, you know, we'll find our way eventually. We do on most stuff. If you think about the automobile, right, you introduce this amazing symbol of progress, you know? I mean, you think about Henry Ford and how he made, like, an amazing thing. And then you think about how it changes society for the better, but yet it's three steps forward, two steps back, because you also introduce some side effects of the automobile. We talk to each other less, you know, we walk less, and there's pollution. Okay. There are some side effects. Still, overall, the automobile is a really good thing. I think over time we solve some of those extra issues in other ways. But overall, I think the arc is toward progress. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just me because I can't live in a world that feels darker than that. But
no, and you know, and it's no, I agree with you, and I think the days of, you know, the Christian raids and Vikings, you know, raping and pillaging, and
would you switch for 1,000 years ago? Yeah. Would you want to live?
No, but you look at that
at any other time.
We've got everybody's got a military at this point, you know, and
right.
You know, and I think it's there, but do I see? You don't see Russia, who could take over half of Europe again just by marching their army, and you know you don't see that happening. You're not going to see that. We're not all of us going to line our army up at Canada and just say, "Oh yeah, you're part of us now."
Right. Yeah. No. It's so
you know.
True.
So it's you know. I think things like that have gone to pass. You know. I think
partly because of that posture. You know. Partly because there are very, very strong disincentives to invading other countries now, no matter who you are. So I think all of the trouble spots you're going to see in the future will be smaller nations, not these big established powers.
We're not going to always agree with them, you know, but it's nothing to cause a war over.
I don't think so. And I think even this trade stuff, you know, sometimes we talk in like these apocalyptic terms about what's going on about the news. Oh my gosh, you know. But I think that all overall, I would not rather live in any other century or millennia than the one that we're living in. I'm having a fairly good time. I know some people are maybe not, but you know, I think overall, even look at things like poverty. We've eradicated a lot of it, you know, not all of it. We still have work to do. But like the amount of people starving 30 years ago was way worse than the amount of people starving now. And so, you know, I do believe in progress. And, you know, if you
life
ask.
Life expectancy continues to
life expectancy, all kinds of stuff are on the way up. So, yeah, it's overall, you know, there's a lot of problems, but overall, I think it's good. Bart would say, just to bring it back to the religious thing and go full circle. Bart would say, you know, that the more people get away from religion, the better they do. And that's the controversy that, you know, people have to wrestle with. Is that true or not? And, you know, Tony obviously thinks the other way. In fact, he says, and this is a good line, he says, if you look at how poverty has been eradicated in a lot of the third world, or you look at how clean water is now in a lot of places, he says, you know who drilled those wells? He says many of them were Christian organizations going and doing missionary work, you know. So everyone's got a point of view, man. Who's
And then we go down the rabbit hole, and I, you know, about certain religions don't believe in, you know, contraceptives, and yet, you know, AIDS has gone rampant in those countries where the missionaries went in,
right,
and,
yeah.
You know, and so there's so much give and take in every direction.
AIDS is bad, but not as bad as condoms.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, and, you know, like you said, we could do this all day long.
All day.
But
all day.
It's good having you on, man.
Hey, thanks so much, man.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
I think you and I could just continue to go for an hour or two or three. And
yeah, and I know this is like off the beaten path a little bit for your listeners. So for those who stayed with us, thank you. And I hope you do get a chance to see the film and let me know what you think.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and when is it dropping on streaming services, I think?
It'll be by the time we air. It's actually today.
Okay.
So if we air this, you know, in what, like a week or something,
yeah.
It'll be out there. Leaving My Father's Faith is the name of the film. Yeah. CampoloFilm.com.
And we're recording this so you guys know on the day that Stephen Hawking passed, and I thought there was interesting tie-ins with religion and Stephen Hawking.
I just heard Rush Limbaugh on the way over here disparaging Stephen Hawking and saying he believed that there was no afterlife. Well, I guess he's finding out now. And all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? The guy's like barely cold. You know what I mean?
It's not to say I agreed with everything Stephen Hawking said. I found him an interesting personality.
Yeah, and plus he was one of the few geniuses, you know, that we actually had in the world. A truly like just insightful, amazing, smart guy. And inspiring because of the fact that he was stuck in that chair and couldn't speak and anything, you know, like he had that robot voice for 30 years or whatever. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's the kind of story that makes you kind of go, "What excuse do I have not to do something with my life?" You know what I
right.
mean? Yeah. I mean, this guy, if that guy could do it, wow.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, John. Well, thanks a lot, my friend, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, at PodcastOne.com, and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Thank you guys for tuning in. If you made it this far, you must have enjoyed that interview. Definitely Definitely go and check that out. It's Leaving My Father's Faith, and it's on Amazon streaming right now. And I'll probably post it up to my Twitter later on today, maybe my Instagram. So, I guess no telling when you're listening to a podcast. I say today. I'll do it today while I'm recording this, but who knows when the heck you guys are going to listen to this. But, yeah, I will have it. You might have to search back a day or two or three but until you find that. But I'll post all the links up on my social media. Big thanks to John Wright. Great movie. I enjoyed it. I know I've got a lot of people I shared it with. They're all saying the same thing. It's got amazing reviews. Did a phenomenal job. And it stirs a conversation, right? You know, he's very neutral in the way he presents it. And it stirs a conversation. That's all we can do, man. Start the conversation, right? Where you take it, that's all up to you. But thanks, John, for calling in or coming over, I guess. We did this one in person. But thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, it's at JimBeaver15, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook groups. Make sure and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Leave a rating and review. And I can promise you guys next week we're going to be back to normal here on Project Action. I think we've got somebody from the Adam Carolla side of things that are coming on Project Action next week. That's right. Somebody from Carolla Digital, I believe, is going to be on here. I heard his name might be Nate Adams, Adam Carolla's business partner, who makes some amazing automotive films. That's right. So we're going over the Carolla side of things here on Project Action. Looking forward to that next week. You guys won't want to miss that one. Nate Adams, he is from Chassis Media, Adam Carolla's production company. So, we're going automotive, but we're staying on the film side of things. It's going to be fun, though. Anytime you get anybody from Carolla Digital over here, it is rad. So thank you guys once again. Make sure and check out John Wright's film streaming on Amazon. It's Leaving My Father's Faith. And we will be back next week with more Project Action on Podcast One right here from the Polaris Razor Studio.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big.